Welcome to Engage Arizona. General Boykin credits U.S. leadership at the time of the 9/11 attacks for progress made and peace kept over 20 years. He blames the lack of leadership now for what he calls an embarrassing retreat that left America's enemies believing they beat America, the country, and they beat Christianity, the religion. Boykin calls for America to be ready for more attacks and to avoid using the men and women in uniform as political pawns. Here now is Kathy Herod with General William G. Boykin.
On the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the attacks on our homeland, we are privileged to have Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin as our guest. General Boykin served our country in the U.S. Army for 36 years. Most significantly, Christ as an ordained minister with a passion for sharing the gospel. For several years now, General Boykin has served as Family Research Council's Executive Vice President. Family Research Council is a trusted friend and ally of Center for Arizona Policy. FRC serves on the federal level in the same way CAP does at the state level. General Boykin's tours of duty included, he is an original member of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. He commanded these warriors in combat operations. He commanded all the Army's Green Berets. He was served as a deputy undersecretary of defense for intelligence. He serves a duty with the CIA. And he has a special focus, though, in encouraging men to be the men that God has called them to be. I know him as a strong leader, as a kind man, and someone I greatly respect. So welcome, General Boykin, to Engage Arizona.
Thank you very much, Kathy, and it is really good to be with you.
Well, today, as we think about 9/11 and the attacks on our country, you know, I was a homeroom mom for my daughter's class, and all the other moms were coming to my house that morning to plan for the school year. And of course, then the TV was on. Where were you on 9/11 20 years ago?
Yeah, I was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I was there commanding all the Army's Green Berets, and I had actually just come back from a tour of the Little Bighorn Battlefield. Had gotten in very late at night or early in the morning, actually, and laid down to take a quick nap before I went to the office, and my wife woke me up and told me what was happening. Of course, I got into the office in record time.
I bet. What was it like? I mean, here you're at Fort Bragg. What was it like that day and the response from the fellow servicemen at Fort Bragg that day?
I think because we were special forces, I think that we had been watching this terror network grow. And I think we knew immediately what this was we were pretty sure we knew who it was. We knew that it was Al-Qaeda. We knew it was Osama bin Laden. And we knew we were going to war. So there was it was a time when everybody, I think, was emotional because of the devastation that they had seen, but they were also angry and ready to go and engage these people that had killed almost 3,000 Americans.
Well, your thoughts on the American response overall, the leadership of President George W. Bush during that period of time?
Yeah, I think that he did exactly what he had to do. We could no longer let them get by without some kind of response. And remember, we'd had a number of terrorist incidents, like the bombing of the USS Cole. And we had not responded to them in any kind of significant way. And knowing that Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda terror network were located in Afghanistan and were being harbored and sheltered there by the Taliban, we had really no choice. If we were going to try and put a stop to this, we had to go after Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and Osama bin Laden. And I think that George Bush's leadership in this time was very, very good. And we went in there, and the truth of the matter is, we went in September, probably around the third week of September, not long after the attack on the World Trade Center. We put boots on the ground in there. We linked up with the Northern Alliance, and we began to fight Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and we took back city after city. And by the first of the year, 2002, we really had control of the country. And I think that that is a tribute to the leadership of George Bush, but also to the readiness of our military at that time to be able to respond so quickly. With support from the CIA, which was very influential and very important. And now I think as I look at that, I hope that we're going to see our military stay ready and not be used as political pawns in what's going on in the country today.
Well, and that's, I think I have kind of a combo question on, you know, what lessons did we learn from 9/11? But then when we see what's happened in Afghanistan over this last month, especially, I mean, it's tragic what we've seen. I mean, people hanging from airplanes trying to get out of that country. I mean, what, you know, with your experience and knowledge, what is going on? Did we not learn those lessons, or is it just our commander-in-chief is so weak and inept?
Yes. Yes. That's exactly what it is. Listen, somebody asked me on a program yesterday that I was doing, well, what were the three lessons that we learned from the 20 years that we were in Afghanistan? And I said, leadership, leadership, and leadership. The question that you asked earlier. And right now, what we're seeing is a lack of leadership. We're seeing a commander-in-chief that has not provided sound direction and orders to our military, nor to our government agencies like the CIA and the State Department. But he's also seems to not be aware of exactly what's going on in Afghanistan. And quite frankly, it bothers me that I see on behalf of the team that he surrounded himself by, I see a team that has not shown a great deal of concern about the Americans that are on the ground in Afghanistan. So I'm very concerned about the military operation in there. And I don't care if you want to say, well, the president made that decision. We have a secretary of defense and a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and their statutory mission is to recommend courses of action to provide their best military judgment to the president of the United States. And I know that they could not, with the years of experience that they have, I know they could not have recommended giving up Bagram Air Force Base, getting the military out, and then trying to get the civilians out. I know they didn't recommend that. But the problem is, if they didn't recommend it, and I don't think they did, they didn't have the influence with the president to be able to use a strategy and a course of action that would actually get those people out and provide them with the protection that they needed to be able to exit that country. If they don't have any more influence with the president than that, then you have to question whether they should be in those jobs. And my answer to that is no, they should not be in those jobs. If they can't influence the president on a life and death situation of thousands of Americans.
Do you have any knowledge or sense of how many Americans still are in Afghanistan, or how many American allies that we should still be trying to get out? Or, I mean, you hear different estimates, and where does the truth lie?
Yeah, nobody knows for sure, but I can tell you it's a lot more than the 100 Americans that the administration has acknowledged. I think you have more like a 1,000 or more. Americans. Now keep this in mind. These are people with American passports. Some of them were born in Afghanistan, but they have gone through the process to become American citizens. And then I think that those that we call the SIVs, the special invitation visas, or people who worked with the U.S. military in one capacity or another, I think there are thousands of those that are still left in there. And I was just talking to somebody a couple of days ago about this, and he acknowledged, yeah, there are thousands of those SIVs that want to come out, and right now they're being hunted down. And if you see videos that you could never show to the public, but if you see some of the videos that are coming from credible sources, you'll see that these people are being killed in some very brutal ways because they work for the Americans. And keep in mind that we are relying on the Taliban. We had to ask the Taliban to give us permission to get our people out and to let them through the checkpoints and to fly their airspace. I mean, this is beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. These are the people we've fought 20 years, and now we are people out. Kathy, that is something that makes me as an American totally humiliated and embarrassed, but also sad for the state that our government is in.
Well, in general, that's one reason why when our governor and speaker of the house welcomed the Afghan refugees into our state and that we would help to take care of these people, that's why I thank them for being willing to do that. I've been asked, well, are you concerned about terrorists that are slipping through by all the people that have left Afghanistan? And, you know, we've kind of said, well, that may be worth the risk. I mean, that's a different way to put it, but we still have an obligation to take care of these people that were our allies and who befriended, and then now we abandon them. But how do you answer that question on, are we concerned about the Afghanis that now are in our country?
Yes. I think we have to acknowledge that in this mass of people that we will be bringing in, that our vetting is not going to be 100%, and there may be terrorists associated with this. But look, at the same time, if they are legitimately people who worked with us and we made a promise to them, we have to bring them back. Now, we've got a vetting process, and we've already found about 100 that are questionable. So the vetting process, once you get them into one of these military bases there where you have more time and you have more resources to be able to really go through a proper vetting process, I think that reduces the risk. But I think we just have to accept it. Somebody may slip through the crack. But look, it's the price that we're paying right now for 20 years in Afghanistan.
You know, I think sometimes we don't emphasize enough that we've not had another attack on our country in 20 years. What do you attribute to our country staying safe from another terrorist attack?
Well, I think when we went in and put boots on the ground in Afghanistan and then started fighting Al-Qaeda, they ultimately basically left Afghanistan, and they went into places like North Africa and other parts of the Middle East because they could no longer operate from Afghanistan. And as long as we had boots on the ground in there and had a counter-terrorist capability, we were searching them out. We were going after them almost every day. We were running some kind of operation to go after a terrorist. It may have been a drone strike, or it may have been Green Berets or Delta Force or SEALs going in on targets and taking these people out or arresting them. And most of the time it was taking them out. It was killing them because they, you know, they were not willing to go without a fight. That said, I think that we can attribute the lack of attacks on America to our presence in Afghanistan once we got them scattered. The problem is now they're coming back. They never completely left, but they went underground. What was left in Afghanistan went underground. They were not a problem, immediately at least. And now you're going to see them coming back in there. And they're coming back so they can shake their fist in our face. Not that they necessarily need Afghanistan, but it's for them, it's a victory. And Kathy, let me just say this. One of the big problems with what we did in this, the way we left Afghanistan, one of the big problems is that the messaging that is going through the jihadist network, through the Islamic world, is that Islam prevailed, Islam won, Islam defeated Christianity. they defeated the great Satan, and that if you'll just be persistent, you can bring America down, you can defeat America. And I think that's going to fuel more terrorist attacks on this country.
Certainly a matter of deep prayer and for people to understand what's going on. I think of the people that we heard who joined up in the Army or the Air Force after 9/11 because they wanted to fight the sense of patriotic duty. And a lot of days now you wonder, do we still even have that sense of patriotic duty? And what is all this doing now to the lack of patriotism? I mean, we can look all around us. But let's shift a little bit to your work at Family Research Council. And you've had an exemplary career, served our nation so honorably, and then now you're at Family Research Council. What a significant career shift. Why at FRC? What's your passion for doing what you do at Family Research Council?
Well, I'll tell you, Kathy, I have six grandchildren. And my wife and I, back in 2011, after our children and grandchildren left our home after Christmas, we stood in the kitchen, and my wife said to me, "What kind of country are we going to leave those six grandchildren?" And it was at that point that we made a pledge to God and to each other that we would spend the rest of our time trying to provide for their future in terms of fighting the evil that is in America, fighting the evil that's in our society, and helping to restore the values that our founding fathers gave us. And that is what motivates both of us, is those six grandchildren. And I don't know how much we can do, but we will do all we can. That's why an organization like yours is so important, is because you are working to secure my grandchildren's future, whether you know them or not.
Amen. Well, I sure have nothing to add to that. And I think that's the motivation that many of us in this cause, to put it that way, we feel that call of God. We're concerned about future generations, and we want to be able to stand before a holy God someday and say, we did everything we could to leave behind a world that honors Christ, that honors God, and that our children and grandchildren have opportunities better than what we have had, and that they have, and most of all, that freedom is secured without a doubt. So General Boykin has been my guest today. Thank you so much, General. What a delight to spend this time with you. Appreciate your wisdom and insight into what's going on, and we will keep you and your work in our prayers. And so God bless you.
Thank you very much, Kathy, and thanks for what you're doing, your organization. You're at the top of the stack in terms of the kind of people that we really like to work with. So God bless you, and I hope to see you.
Thank you for listening to Engage Arizona, Public Policy for Daily Life. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe, rate, and give a review on any podcast platform you use. For more information, visit azpolicy.org.